oxygen. It's nature's oldest therapy and plays an essential role in destroying viruses, bacteria, mold, yeast, and fungus, and keeping the human body healthy and strong. Now, you can give your body and your immune system a mega boost of disease-fighting oxygen with all-natural Oxy-C. With so many people now leading a sedentary indoor lifestyle, most are in a chronic state of oxygen deprivation, which sets up a perfect environment for disease, general fatigue, and a host of other symptoms. Oxy-C is yours in simple, convenient capsules. Nothing to mix, nothing to hassle with. Take it with juice or water anytime. Feel a cold or flu approaching? Have no energy or spark anymore? Try all-natural Oxy-C and prepare to be amazed. Oxy-C is only available from New Earth Health Solutions at Rents.com. Look for the New Earth banner at Rents.com.
There's a lot happening on this ever more troubled planet by design, and certainly the war in Ukraine is already pointing toward the end of Ukraine, because as soon as they begin to use the depleted uranium rounds, it goes into the ground, into the soil, into the people, and we know that Zelensky has already been hard at work, Zionist that he is, eradicating Goyim in the Ukraine military, just wiping them out. And I simply ask you, if these happen to be Jewish people, would he be sending them to the front with 2 days training? Would he be sending them to the front at all? And the answer is a profound no chance. But he doesn't mind sending Goyim to the front to be churned up in the Russian meat grinder. No problem. None. Keep in mind, that's a true statement and an absolutely correct observation. Okay, Mitchell Henderson, welcome back.
You got a lot of information.
Thank you. I'm glad you're back.
So, I do, but first let's talk about Bakhmut, because you mentioned to me that there's some confusion on that. And I understand the confusion. What the confusion is propaganda by the West. It's what our news media are telling people. They're saying, oh, well, Russia can't mount a offensive.
No, that's right.
They say, oh, Russia can't even take Bakhmut. Bakhmut is a victory for Ukraine. Well, let me explain this to people. Okay, so there's certain terrain, like swamp, mud, jungle, or very broken mountainous terrain, that you really can't put mechanized forces in. You can't, even if it's flat terrain, you can't take a tank across it if it's just mud, okay? And the mud in that part of the world is probably the worst mud in the world. It's almost like a swamp without it being a swamp, okay?
Well, it's up to 2 feet deep in places. It's mud.
We're talking five or six feet deep sometimes, okay?
That's how deep the topsoil is. That's right.
Yeah, it can sink in it. So what kind of forces do you have to use in order to fight in such terrain? Well, you use light infantry. And what is light infantry? Well, light infantry consists of light infantry, airborne troops, air mobile troops, rangers, special forces, and the Marine Corps. Those are all light infantry, okay? They're meant to go in with LPCs, which means leather personnel carriers, boots, okay? So the war you see right now in Ukraine is a light infantry war because of the mud. And who's making advances? Well, Russia's advancing. They're advancing. Even in Bakhmut, they're advancing every day. Okay, but why, if they're not going to, if they cannot launch an offensive until the end of May, why would they want to take Bakhmut right now? What benefit is it? Bakhmut is a benefit to them if they allow the Ukrainians to come in. Into Bakhmut is just a kill box. It's a place where they can kill Ukrainian soldiers, because the first objective of any army is to destroy the enemy army. And that is exactly what Russia is doing every day. They are destroying the Ukrainian army. There is no victories for the Ukrainians. They're going to be worn down, and as soon as they can break out, there's two things they have to do. You have to remember that in the Donbass, or in Donetsk, there was they had 8 years to dig in entrenchments, bunkers, shelters, all kinds of prepared positions around Bakhmut and Bakhmut and Avdiivka, and those are the two places that Russia has to crash through before they can expand out to the Dnieper. And actually, right now, today, the Russian forces are advancing in Bakhmut and in Avdiivka. But should they be in a hurry? Should they throw lives away to be in a hurry to take these cities? Well, no, because where are they going to go? There's nowhere for them to go right now. So why should they spend lives taking them? See, Putin does not fight his war by public relations. Who does that? America does that. Ukraine does that. Europe does that. Every battles are fought for the sake of public relations and propaganda. Okay? And lives are thrown away. In World War II, Franklin Roosevelt, when they landed in Algeria, he wanted to first broadcast to the French troops to give them a chance to surrender, and he did that. It was 1940s style virtue signaling. He was going to try to be the good guy, the hero. Okay, and what he did is he got masses of American soldiers killed on the beach because he did that. When you attack somewhere, you don't want to announce the attack. You want it to be as much of a surprise as possible.
Of course.
Okay?
Of course.
And Roosevelt, for public relations and propaganda purposes, spent Americans' lives for his own public relations. Okay?
Well, look what he did in Pearl Harbor.
Yes, that also. He could have warned them. We knew way ahead of time it was coming, but he... Yeah. Specifically kept General Short and Admiral Kimmel in the dark. He did not let them know what was coming.
Nope.
So
hung them out to dry.
Right. So we spend soldiers' lives all the time just for propaganda purposes, okay? It's not anything that helps us win at all, okay? So that's what you're seeing in Ukraine. Everybody's just lauding all this thing, oh, the Ukrainians are doing this. You'll see videos, oh, Ukrainians kick butt here, kick butt there. This is all propaganda. It's none of these victories that they talk about the Ukraine having is of any value at all. Even the victories they had when Russia pulled back to its four provinces, those weren't Ukrainian victories. When you withdraw your troops and the enemy comes in, the enemy has not defeated you. They've just gone in where you're not anymore. That's it. It's not any kind of military victory. It doesn't even speak to military prowess or anything. Okay? They abandon it to the enemy. That's as simple as it is. So I just wanted to clear that up. Okay,
Bakhmut
and Avdiivka are kill boxes. They're there. The purpose of what the Russians are doing are killing Ukrainian troops. They're going to have about 500,000 freshly trained, freshly equipped, rested troops when they go on their offensive. Okay. And then on the Ukraine is asking for cluster munitions and depleted uranium shells.
Yeah.
Our press went apoplectic for 20 years over the use of this stuff and said, this is bad, this is evil. Now, all of a sudden, cluster bombs and depleted uranium is no longer evil. We're gonna give it to the Ukrainians to use against the Russians. These weapons are considered war crimes, okay? War crimes. These are not accepted weapons. They are banned in over 100 countries. So, you know, You know, there's no sense, there's no logic, there's no propriety, no integrity, nothing in our government, in our foreign policy.
No.
So what I want to do tonight is I'm going to talk about a different aspect, because I think people need to be warned of what's coming, okay? So I want to talk a little bit about the sanctions war. So in the sanctions war, if you remember, I said before that when you're trying to determine what the Russians are going to do, and this is not from me, this is from hardcore intelligence officers that spent a life in Russia, okay, that really know the place. They say you never have to wonder what the Russians are doing, because they will tell you exactly what they're doing. Okay, they don't keep it a secret. When they say they're going to go to the Dnieper, they're going to go to the Dnieper. When they say, well, we can't leave Ukraine behind because it's just going to be constant turmoil forever, that means they're going to take all of Ukraine. Okay, so they always tell you what they're going to do. Okay, so on March 24th of this year, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov published an article in Razvedchik magazine, which is in English is called Intelligence Officer Magazine. Okay, this is the magazine that their intelligence officers, you know, write for and read and stuff like that. Okay, so he stated this: this is Putin telling us what he's doing. Okay. This is Lavrov telling us what the Russians are doing. So he says, we are working with our reliable international partners to transition to foreign trade settlements and non-dollar and non-euro currencies, and to create an infrastructure of interbank and other financial and economic ties that will not be controlled by the West. The international community no longer looks up to the West, which President Putin has aptly described as the empire of lies, as the ultimate truth, or the idea of democracy, freedom, or prosperity. This new multipolar world order, don't confuse when they say new world order, in Russian say new multipolar world order, does not accept Washington as world dictator. There are no leaders or followers among the members. Decisions are made by consensus. Every nation is sovereign and independent, and all members of the new order are equal and work together in mutual respect. Don't you think that would be very attractive to third world countries? I mean, you know, instead of being stepped on and treated like dirt.
Yeah.
Okay, so he says, if one nation has a problem with another, it is between them, and one nation cannot pressure other nations to sanction or punish. It is just between the two that have the issue. Okay, that's kind of a nice thing, too. This very concept is causing peace to break out everywhere, okay? But I'll go into that peace because it's detrimental to us. Okay, so we saw a taste of this last week when the president of Mexico, Lopez Obrador, said after Anthony Blinken criticized Mexico for human rights that the United States government are liars. It is just how they are. The U.S. believes it is the government of the world. Now, this is a quote from the president of Mexico. Blinken complained of Mexican law enforcement carrying out extrajudicial killings. Lopez Obrador said that the U.S. news is filled with stories of extrajudicial killings like George Floyd, blah, blah, blah. And the U.S. CIA actually murdered a duly elected president of the United States, John F. Kennedy, saying that no one is safe from our government, as well as disappearances, which he says is common knowledge when it comes to the Clintons. Torture, which he says was official U.S. policy during the war on terror, and is openly admitted. He responded to open mistreatment of citizens and says the U.S. does that to white people, as shown by the January 6 political prisoners. The most laughable criticism was Blinken saying that Mexico has rank crime and low rates of offenses being prosecuted. Lopez Obrador pointed out that these stories are daily routine in the U.S. news media, the Los Angeles, San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, go on, Philadelphia, Chicago, you name it, New York City, okay? They hate being preached to by woke girly men from the U.S. and Europe, okay?
That's good. Woke girly men. I like that. That's good. Sums
so
it right up.
This is a neighbor, and we have lost all credibility with them. All they see coming from us are lies and hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. Throughout the 20th and 21st century, the Bretton Woods world financial system was set up, including the World Bank and International Monetary Fund, after World War II. Having set these systems up and controlling them, the United States has used that system to bully third world nations and sanction them if they don't obey. Nations park their money in the dollar, but then the U.S. cuts them off if they disobey and seizes all of the funds from them. The U.S. seized $300 billion from Russia when sanctions were imposed. Furthermore, the U.S. and EU also seized the private assets of private Russian citizens. The world is tired of this behavior. Russia prepared itself for this starting in 2014. They isolated their banks from Western banks. They sold off U.S. Treasury bonds. China is selling them off also. These nations were the biggest holders of those bonds. Such a sell-off would undercut our bonds and make them less desirable. If you look to see where most bonds are sold overseas, it is Belgium and Luxembourg. But it's not Belgium and Luxembourg are not buying them. The U.S. set up front businesses in Belgium and Luxembourg to buy back all of our outstanding bonds to make it look like a free market deal, which it is not. This behavior on a private company would be called a crime, and people would go to jail for a long time, okay? But the government, of course, it can do crimes. The foreign nations know this. American citizens
do not. That's what governments
do. Yeah. Many nations want to dump our treasury bills because they don't trust the United States with their money. What the sanctions war has done is encourage dumping the dollar as an international exchange currency on the petrodollar. The United States printed a massive amount of dollars to be used overseas for international trade exchange. But the third world nations say that they are tired of using it because it is only backed by the honesty and good faith of America. They do not believe we are honest, nor do we have good faith. Sanctions and the very concept of sanctions are killing the dollar, and the U.S. use this money to control the world. The world does not want to be controlled. The dollar comes with too many strings attached, and we often do not give nations their money back when we sanction them, making the dollar very untrustworthy. Keep in mind that we print all of this money, and it does not cause inflation because we are, quote, exporting the inflation. If the world rejects the dollar as an international exchange currency, we will import that inflation back to the U.S., and it will result in hyperinflation. It's coming, folks. It's coming. The new trade and financial networks is the BRICS nations. This is popular because there is mutual respect between all players. Although China is the largest economy of the BRICS, it does not lead it. Each member is co-equal regardless of how big their economy is or how big their military power is. It is multipolar. Each nation respects the sovereignty and independence of the other members and will not interfere in their internal affairs. It is a fiction that China does this. It, in fact, does not do it. That's why they're so effective in their foreign policy. So who wants to join? Let's consider the petrodollar because of its oil-producing nations. Let me digress for a minute in this BRICS nation,
sure.
Because this has been in the news in the past year. The BRICS nation, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, they've been buying gold like crazy. Okay. Now, nobody ever said why they're buying gold, but the reason why they're buying gold is because the new currency that they're setting up for trade will not be fiat currency like the dollar. It will be gold-backed money. The value of gold-backed money is you can only print as much money as you have gold. If you don't have the gold, you can't print another dollar. So this is very stable, very safe currency. Okay.
Sure.
So the ruble, the yuan, the rupee, the rand, and the reis, the money of Brazil, will all be gold-black money. Okay. So it's real money, not fiat money.
Got
okay.
It. Yeah.
So let me go back to who wants to join. Let's consider the petrodollar, because if oil-producing nations all join, there will be an end to the petrodollar. So Iran, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Oman, Qatar, Bahrain, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Turkey, and Jordan, I found out today, wants to join. That would give the BRICS most of the world's energy, and they won't be using dollars anymore. Our money is tainted. It has too many strings attached to it. Why the rush now? Do you remember back in December the G7 plus Australia decided to put a cap on oil from Russia at $60 per barrel? Russia just stopped selling it to anyone who put this cap on them. Now, this caused a problem because it's caused fuel prices to go up. So the solution, Biden's solution is not to print more money, not to dig more oil wells, not to get more energy. His solution is a thing called NOPEC. And what NOPEC is it's to put a price cap on everybody's oil sales. Okay, so none, this did not work for the G7 oil cap. I mean, Russia just didn't sell them any oil. It wasn't effective in any way. Nobody got oil from Russia at $60 a barrel. Okay, unless they made a contract and they were not having a price cap. Okay, so. So he thinks now it's double down on stupidity, okay? It didn't work for the G7 in Australia. So let's just make Europe and the United States, Canada, all these countries, the West, let's make them say, oh, we're not buying oil unless you sell it to us for $60 a barrel. Well, yep. You know what? Yep. Who does that? Who's going to sell? Saudi Arabia's not going to sell a drop of oil at our price, okay? They want to fix the price for the purchase. It just doesn't work that way. The oil-producing nations are calling bullshit and will not sell to the industrialized nations that support this price cap. Imagine the USA is not going to the market, but imposing a price on oil as if we were the communist dictators of the world. If they don't play, the U.S. will not settle their dollar account. This is driving almost all of the petroleum-producing nations into the BRICS. Outside the Middle East, Libya and Tunisia just found huge field with massive deposits. They want it to be BRICS-oriented and not to the West. Algeria also has a ploy to join. In Africa, Namibia, Angola, Equatorial Guinea, and Nigeria, all with massive oil deposits, want to join BRICS and not use petrodollars. Such South America's major producer, Venezuela, wants to join. In Asia, Indonesia wants to join. This at a time when we no longer have energy independence. The petrodollars that come home will destroy our economy. I mean, when we're fighting this war, we're pouring all these weapons into Ukraine, and Putin's just letting us screw ourselves. He's just sitting back watching us act like fools in the world. I'll get a little bit more into that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, did you see the story today? You may have missed it, maybe not. Zelensky is now complaining that they are out of ammo again. He said, we have no weapons, we have no ammo, we cannot do a counterattack. It's your fault. You people didn't give us enough ammunition. Now, what in fact has happened here is that we have looted our ammo stores to the extent that it's going to take 6 years to restore the artillery ammunition that we've given up and it's been wasted over there, just thrown away. Thrown away on what? Incredible.
Oh, yes, exactly. So keep in mind that sanctions also drove many nations away from our banking industry, and U.S. and EU banks are failing as a result. You're seeing the banks fail. It's a result of sanctions.
True. Totally correct. Yeah.
So Russia is not doing this to us. We are doing it to ourselves. And the sanctions that we impose are killing the American and European economies. So this past week, I dug deep what Africa thinks, okay? I mean, I spent a lot of time really chasing all down the African leaders and stuff, seeing what their attitudes are. Please follow me here, okay? CRTDEI is official U.S. and EU policy that basically says that white people are evil and cannot be but racist. We are the cause of all suffering and misery in the world. We have this in our foreign policy in that Tony Blinken has Black Lives Matter flags on every embassy in the world saying white man bad. So how do we expect Africa to see us? Well, they see us as the smug and condescending woke jerks that our leaders are. They will no longer be talked down to or bullied or bribed. For example, the new U.S. ambassador to Sudan said that he was going to, this is November, said he was going to strengthen Sudan, straighten Sudan out, and Russian business would not be welcome in Africa. Since then, Sudan has agreed to let Russia put a naval base on the Red Sea and gave Russia the contract to refurbish and expand their petroleum production. Okay, a total snub from Sudan. A month ago, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen sent a black undersecretary of the Treasury to Africa to get Nigeria to side with the U.S. against Africa and Russia. This is condescending. The Africans are supposed to do what we want because we send a black man to talk to them. They're not that infantile and stupid, okay? I've watched their presidents talking to Macron, talking to Blinken, talking to these people we send over there, and you know what? They talk down to them. You know, they will. I saw the president of the Congo. This is just a month ago. He in front of the audience, Macron was trying to put a narrative out about French helping the Africans and stuff like that. And the president of Congo said, "You're lying. Quit lying to my people. This is not a place for you to lie to us." Okay, and he said, "You're the reason why this is all messed up, and that's all messed up." You know, so. Anyways, they're kind of getting tired of it. After the visit, Nigeria decided to join BRICS. They actually decided to join BRICS after we talked to them. Okay. Mm-hmm. We learned nothing. We placed a black general in charge of African command, and less nations in Africa are interested in having U.S. troops in their nations. To them, it's so smug, so condescending, so absurd. It's like we're talking to them like they're simpletons. Oh, a black man is the general of AFRICOM, so we're supposed to respect America for that, and we're supposed to get on board because it's a black man running it. Mm-hmm. You know, the Africans just don't see things the way that American blacks see things, okay? Africans are not into DEI and CRT. That's not their thing, okay? We behave badly when we're there. The U.S. military makes enemies there. Placing a black in charge does not mean anything to them. They just see it as rank pandering without substance. So aside from CRT, DEI, African nations are not black ghetto residents. They are not Americans. They have their own traditional customs and social mores. The U.S. sanctioned Uganda and Kenya because they have criminal laws against LGBT. The U.S. would be more friendly towards them if they legalized and gave special protections to LGBT people in their countries. Uganda and Kenya told them no. They think the U.S. should respect their traditional culture instead of them respecting woke Western culture. Tony Blinken's State Department wants to spread CRT, DEI, and LGBT culture at the tip of an American bayonet. And, you know, the world is learning to say no to woke America. What we are seeing is a world revolution seeking liberation from American bullying. So Tony Blinken is also losing Latin America. Last summer, Blinken hosted the Summit of the Americas. Like any woke political hack, he did not invite Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua to the summit. Mexico, Bolivia, Honduras, and St. Vincent and the Grenadines protested not inviting them. Mexican President López Obrador refused to meet with Biden on the sidelines of the summit. Mm. Because mm-hmm. of that mm-hmm. exclusion. The Prime Minister of Barbados, which just cut itself off from the British Commonwealth, said in her opening remarks, and I'll quote it, "It's wrong that Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua are not here because, as you heard from the Bahamas, that we need to speak with those with whom we disagree, and we don't only need to narrowcast. That is a part of the problem with the world. There's too much narrowcasting instead of broadcasting. Mm-hmm. There is too much talking at instead of talking with." Okay. And that was
Prime Minister of Barbados?
Yeah, Prime Minister of Barbados got up and said
that. Male, female?
It's a female.
Huh. It's pretty smart, well-educated lady. Yeah.
Yep. So this is amplified by our relations with Russia, where they see the risk of nuclear war because the U.S. will talk at Russia but will never listen to Russia. They also saw that in our Africa summit, Biden did not talk with any African leaders simply because Democrats think Africans belong to the plantation and should obey. And that's the way they think we're treating them. Lincoln tells foreigners what to think and how to see the world, and he does not listen to anyone. Now, this isn't me saying this. This is what African and Latin American leaders say about Lincoln. Richard Haass, who is a leader of the Council of Foreign Relations, said of the summit, and I'm quoting him, now he is a woke person too, but this is what he is also a foreign policy thing. He said the summit of the Americans looks to be a debacle, a diplomatic own goal. The U.S. has no trade proposal, no immigration policy, and no infrastructure package. Instead, the focus is on who will and who will not be there. Unclear is why we even pressed for it to happen. Nicholas Cole, a professor of public policy at UCLA, and you got to figure he's a woke guy too, okay? He said, it's a freaking amateur hour. It doesn't seem like the USA prepared with an image in mind. Chinese summits are a very different animal. In contrast, China comes to the table handing out infrastructure projects that these nations need to advance their economies. Biden at this time sent $40 billion to Ukraine for war, but only $461 million for the 31 countries at the summit. That's less than $1 billion for all of Latin America. The U.S. goal at the summit signaled to the Western Hemisphere nations that respect and embrace America's version of democracy. This is an unrealistic goal, as it is impossible for every country to adopt the American style of development. Now, this is a woke guy, but he has enough of a brain to see that this is bad foreign policy. Both of these guys did, okay? So China's trade with Latin America is twice as much as America's. China's trade was $307 billion, and America's was only $156 billion.
Wow.
What Latin American countries are worried about is that America is pushing for a war with China, and if it happens, America will want them to sanction China. This would be extremely harmful to their people. So they want to dump the dollar also. The difference between China as a friend and America as a friend is that America demands human rights, democracy, LGBT protection and special rights, and diversity, equity, and inclusion. China will leave them alone and respect their sovereignty and independence and respect their culture and their politics. They know America will never do that. And that is one reason why China does it, because they're not going to act like us on the world stage, okay? They want friends, not enemies. The Biden administration is losing the sanctions war that is destroying NATO instead of Russia. America and Europe's heavy-handed treatment of Russia is alienating the world. We are losing friends fast. The world will soon isolate the U.S., NATO, and the EU. We will be the pariah states. That is an acceptable goal, believe it or not, for the Zionists. Anyways, if we lose, the Zionists win. If we win, the Zionists win. They do things that way.
You got
consider
it.
All that I have just said. What does Marxist DEI bring to America? Okay, so let me just cover this real fast. So we have a Zionist Jew, Tony Blinken, at the State Department, and our foreign policy is the worst that it's ever been. He has made America the enemy of the world and mankind.
You bet.
We have a Zionist Jew, Janice Yellen, at the Treasury Department, and our economy is dying. We have business failures, bank failures, inflation, and real and actual unemployment. We are headed for economic and financial collapse. We have a Zionist Jew, Alejandro Mayorkas, at Homeland Security, and never has our homeland been more insecure. We have more illegal entries than ever with few deportations. We have so many drugs like fentanyl entering our nation and destroying public health in real time. These illegals bring infectious disease to us also. We have a Zionist Jew, Merrick Garland, at the Justice Department, and never have we been plagued by so much crime and so little punishment. Instead, he puts all resources to punishing law-abiding white people. Blacks can commit crimes with impunity. The only time you will see them arrest a black person is if they can take lots of money from them. It is no longer a crime for blacks to victimize white people, but a capital offense for a white person to harm a black person, even in self-defense. The Justice Department has been politicized and weaponized against white Americans. Jennifer Granholm, the Secretary of Energy, was a Canadian until she was 21 years old. Our energy policy is a disaster. She took us from energy independence to energy failure in 2 years. Jeff Slaintz, a Zionist Jew, is chief of staff at the White House. In view of Biden's mental capacity, he is the real president of the United States. Avril Haines, a Zionist Jew, is director of national intelligence. She makes sure that the administration gets absolutely no unbiased information about what's going on in the world. She assures that the U.S. government and the American people are kept in the dark so that we make the worst possible information. Other affirmative and equity hires are Pete Buttigieg, faggot, Secretary of Transportation, responsible for food chain disruptions that led to inflation, inability to unload cargo containers.
He couldn't even get up. He couldn't even be bothered to go to East Palestine until, what, a week later or something? Creep. What a creep.
He's worthless. Inability to unload cargo containers in the port of Los Angeles, airlines canceling tens of thousands of flights, and railroad derailments like the one in East Palestine, Ohio. And I heard there's another one today or yesterday. There's another
today.
Derailment with...
Well, I saw it today anyway. Yeah, another chemical train derailed.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, Michael Reagan, black administrator of the EPA, who does nothing to fence and fix or prevent all of the environmental disasters for the past 2 years. Deb Haaland, Native American, Secretary of the Interior, has presided over the decay of our public lands, the refusing of petroleum leases and mining on federal lands, and of starting the largest wildfire in New Mexico history, her home state. Lloyd Austin, black Secretary of Defense, who has presided over the ruin of our military force, the debacle in Afghanistan, and will preside over the defeat of American forces on the world stage. Martha Fudge, black Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, that has presided over the worst homeless problem in American history and the absolute urban decay. Miguel Cardona, Puerto Rican, who has presided over the sexualization of our children in public schools, drag string story hour, and critical race theory in public schools. He is a Marxist, plain and simple. Cardona is the one who solicited the National School Board Association to make an official complaint to Biden to get the FBI to squash parental objections to gay and racist education policies. And finally, Linda Thomas Greenfield, black UN ambassador, who makes the U.S. look like idiots before the world. Finally, we have Joe Biden, a demented old pedophile for president. Seriously, who can take us seriously with him as our leader? If we know he's an incestuous old pedophile, the rest of the world knows, too. He's laughable to the rest of the world. He represents America, the greatest nation on earth. We're over. It's over. Okay.
That list, that list you read is all Zionist Jew, black, with some Latinos in there, and one of them was a Zionist Jew. I'm hearing a pattern here. These are facts.
Zionist,
these are not made up.
We have a Zionist government right now. That's what it is.
Absolutely. So does Ukraine.
Destroying the
Funniest thing, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, course it is. It's the same mentality. It's the same pathology. It's horrible. It's absolutely incredible. 2% of our population is running the country into the trash can of history.
Yeah, it's true. This is exactly why we should have never allowed the 2020 coup d'etat from taking place. Yes, blame the Democratic Party, but also blame all of the Republican leaders that went along with the rigged election. My point is that all these Biden affirmative action hires are an embarrassment to our once great nation. They are destroying America's image in the world. Like sanctions, they are responsible for other nations not trusting us or even have anything to do with us.
Right.
We are facing economic, social, cultural, and political collapse in America, and you should know why. Zionism, plain and simple. You see, Zionism is Marxism, communism, Bolshevism, cultural Marxism, abortion, feminism, gay liberation, and, of course, drag string story hour. That's all Zionist. The god of Zionism is Satan. So, I want to emphasize that it's just, as I went through, it was just astounding to me. The American press doesn't let anybody know how much the rest of the world actually detests us. They make it look like, oh, we're respected all over the world. I couldn't find anybody that respects us, okay, outside of Europe, but they're just as brain dead as American woke leadership is, okay?
Now, let me add something here.
Leadership is a misnomer. Yes.
We don't even respect ourselves.
No, we don't.
Anymore.
We don't.
Go ahead.
So we saw several things come out. I want to kind of paint a picture a little bit of how this is accelerating. So what happened after World War II is Roosevelt met with the King of Saudi Arabia and created the petrodollar. That if Saudi Arabia would handle all of its petroleum sales in dollars, the United States would guarantee the security of Saudi Arabia. Now, we basically did that until Biden was elected president. On his first day of president, he said, I'm going to make Saudi Arabia a pariah state. The next thing he did is Houthi missiles were firing at the Saudi Arabian oil processing places, and Joe Biden pulled all our air defenses out of there and left Saudi Arabia defenseless. Okay, yeah. He did this to pressure the King of Saudi Arabia. Well, he has to understand the King of Saudi Arabia is not elected. He is a monarch. He's an absolute monarch. He's the one who decides everything.
Dictator for life. Yeah.
Right. So here's the thing is, so what happens? Well, China's been doing business. As a matter of fact, China's the one that, when they had the Iran-Iraq war, China is the one who gave all the weapons to Iran to fight Iraq. And we supported Iraq, okay? So they've always had good relations with them. And, of course, China buys from Saudi Arabia and stuff, too. So China went over there and said, hey, you know, you want to solve this problem in Yemen? Let's talk. So the first thing they got was a ceasefire in Yemen. Instead of Saudi Arabia scrambling to get more air defense missiles, they simply talked to Iran and through intermediaries and got a ceasefire in Yemen so that it wouldn't happen anymore. Okay. Then China brokers a peace between Saudi Arabia and Iran. This is momentous, okay? This is major. This is the end of the petrodollar. This will be the destruction of the American economy and American dollar, okay? And they did it. This is what the King of Saudi Arabia said. He said that agreement we had for the petrodollar was for the defense of Saudi Arabia. When Biden became president and pulled the defenses away from Saudi Arabia, that canceled the deal. There's no longer a petrodollar deal, okay? So already about a third of its sales are not in dollars anymore. And they're going to transition away from it as much as they can. Yeah. Not only that, but with Saudi Arabia and Iran making peace and talking to each other, look, as soon as America turns their back and turns away, peace breaks out everywhere, okay? All these long-term things, not only
all
that,
true.
But it all came out that the people who set Iran against Saudi Arabia was the United States. We used propaganda to spark that war between those people, okay, for our benefit. And the Saudi Arabians are aware of this. Now, what? Here's another thing that you have to take a look at. So Iran wants to join BRICS, and so does Iraq, so does Syria, so does Lebanon. So Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, and Iran are the Shia states in the Middle East, and they're now at peace with the Sunni states. Okay, the only country that Iran is fighting now is Israel. No, they're not going to fight Arabs anymore. Okay, Russia brokered something too. They went. They talked to the other Arab countries, and President Assad over the past few months has gone to Oman, to Saudi Arabia, to UAE, to Jordan, to all these countries, and he's opening relations back up with them, and the Arab countries are going to bring Syria back into the Arab League. Okay, this is a disaster. So when you think about this, Iraq will be asking us to get out. When they join BRICS, we have to be gone. They're not going to be a BRICS if they have American military bases there. You can't have an American base and be in BRICS, okay? So we've got to get out. So we've got soldiers in Syria. Those soldiers are there illegally against UN charter, against the UN charter. We're sending aircraft and bombing Syrian cities against the UN charter. We're murdering citizens on the ground, okay?
Yes, we are.
So what's going to happen when all the U.S. gets kicked out of there? What's going to happen to these troops there? Not only that, but as I said, the world is now saying no to us. Before, if Iran attacked our troops, we would retaliate, and then Iran would back off and be quiet for a while. Not this time. We bombed some Iranian camps in Syria, and keep in mind, Iran is there by invitation of Syria. They are legally there, okay? And what's going to happen is we've just outed ourselves of that area. Now another Muslim country is put in to join BRICS also, and that's Turkey. Okay, keep in mind that Turkey cannot be kicked out of NATO. The only way you can get kicked out of NATO, you cannot be kicked out of NATO. The only way you leave NATO is if you voluntarily leave. And I'm predicting Turkey will probably voluntarily leave.
That'd be a big move. I don't know why they're in NATO. I never could understand
it. Yeah, I don't know why either. They don't need to be. Turkey has a very big army and a fairly
fourth in the world, I think.
Decent army. Yeah. Well, they're not fourth. I think they're a little bit further down. But they're the second biggest army in NATO.
So if half the
troops are American troops and the other half are European, a full third of the European troops are Turkish troops. So that brings them down quite a bit. And Turkey's you got to keep in mind, the United States has sanctioned Turkey before, many times. And Turkey is tired of that behavior, okay? So you see all this peace is breaking out over there, but keep in mind, this peace is a realignment of power in the Middle East. If you look at Russia, add Belarus, add Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, all those countries, then add Iran, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Turkey, and then you have all the Jordan and all the Arab nations on the peninsula, and then Pakistan wants to join. India's there. Afghanistan will join if they can. Okay, and China and India will be okay with that. Okay, so Indonesia wants to join. Thailand wants to join. Burma wants to join. Vietnam wants to join. Cambodia, Laos. The world is polarizing now into two major camps. But you had, when I just drew this map of China, Russia, India, this is over half the world. This is all of Asia. Aside from South Korea, Japan, the Philippines, and Taiwan, this is all of Asia, okay, wants to be in BRICS. And what do they have? They have internal lines of communication, which means they can rush supplies and troops to wherever they want to fight anything, and they don't have to cross oceans to do it, okay? So then go on to North Africa, Algeria, Tunisia, Libya, Egypt. They all want to join BRICS. Sudan wants to join BRICS. South America, Venezuela, Nicaragua, Ecuador, Peru, Chile, all of the Latin American nations want to join BRICS, okay? They want to get rid of that nasty bully that always preaches to them and talks at them. They're tired of it. They want some respect, and they've learned how to say no. And I think we should reflect that here in America. We need to start saying no to our government. We need to say no to everything they're doing, because it's all bad. It's all detrimental to us, every bit of it. There's nothing your government has and or wants to do that is for your benefit in any way, shape, or form. Okay? So, it's just the way it is. While our media is worried about, glorious victories in the Ukraine war, well, the rest of the world is turning on America and Europe. The rest of the world is tired of us. They're done with us. This is going to hurt us economically like you cannot believe. This is a realignment of the world. And why is this realignment happening? It's happening because of American weakness, our defeat in Afghanistan, our weak posture, pushing DEI and CRT and LGBT stuff. That's the most important thing that the world has to do. And you know what? The rest of the world doesn't listen to that climate change crap. They don't think the world's going to end. They think it's absurd to say that the world's going to end because the temperature goes up 2 degrees.
We are an obscenity on the world stage. We are. There's no question. Sorry.
You know, they are tired of us. I think it's time that we get tired of us, too. You know, because listen, I can tell you this right now. All of everything that I said, not one bit of it, has been done by the hardworking American people. It has all been done by these cheating, lying Zionists who have taken over our government and is tearing our country apart. It's their fault. We need to name the enemy, recognize the enemy, and then fight against the enemy. You know? So...
2% of our population.
Whatever.
That's it.
Yeah.
2%.
Yeah.
And within 2%. That 2% are the active Zionist elements, and they have this nose for power, and they get right in there. I don't know how they do it, but they do it.
Yet,
it's amazing.
Yet, Jeff, they're so incompetent. If people want to see how incompetent these Zionists are, watch congressional hearings with Mayorkas or Yellen or Blinken or Austin or any of these guys. This listen to the thing. These people don't even know what's going on in their own departments. Leadership means you are responsible for everything that happens in your department, and all these people. They go before Congress, they don't know anything. They can't say anything.
That's true.
When they ask a question, they try to rephrase the question instead of answer it. It is pathetic. It is a lack of leadership. It's actually a lack of intelligence, okay? Because this is an intelligence that is so arrogant that they think they can just lie to our faces and we're going to believe it and we're going to buy whatever they tell us. Well, I think we should be done buying what they tell us. They told us to take this shot, and the shot's killing everybody, right?
And they were behind the whole thing. They were behind the whole thing. Read Bart Klassen's medical paper, scientific paper on the whole thing. And he names the guilty parties. No question.
Yes, sir.
Very brave man. All right, Mitchell, thank you. That you got all the stands right, too. I don't know anybody else who could do that. Every one of them. Well done. That was really good. Briefly, real quick, Bakhmut will continue to grind on as it is for the weeks ahead. The only way that the Ukrainians will ever do anything is retreat. Otherwise, they're going to die there. It's as simple. So, we'll see. All right, you take care, and we'll talk soon, Mitch. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right,
bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.
Well done. Excellent presentation, Mitchell Henderson. Okay, back with you tomorrow night in 21 hours. Thanks for being here. A lot going on. Be well and stay safe.